Attention, you're listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. The active ingredient in this program is common sense, which has been documented to prevent and even cure liberalism. Be advised that listening may cause you to lean to the right. The doctor will be with you momentarily. Here's your host, Todd Huff.
Well, welcome to the Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. Here we are on Monday. It is February 1st. It is the day of the Iowa caucus. The first votes will now be cast for the nomination of President of the United States for the Republican Party and, of course, the Democrat Party. A lot less selection over there, incidentally. Down to two old white guys and a Clinton, but we'll talk about that, a little bit, especially when you factor in things like classified emails, 22 emails that are so sensitive on Hillary Clinton's, well, not just emails, but files that are so sensitive on her server that we can't even be told what's in those files. I guess if you want to know, you could contact the Russians, the Chinese, the Iranians. For all we know, it might be tucked away somewhere in that fantastic nuclear agreement with Iran. Those are the things, unfortunately, that make the Democrat primary interesting. It's not the candidates themselves. It's a race to socialism, a race to giveaways, a race to erasing what made this country great in the form of destroying the capitalistic free markets, the freedom of choice, and the liberties that Americans are granted under the United States Constitution. But be that as it may, we're going to spend our time speaking about the Republican nomination for president, the Iowa caucus in general, and we'll get into a few other things as well. But anyway, it's great to be here, by the way. 1 week away, incidentally, from the Super Bowl as well. And I mean, this is the time when all of these debates and positions on candidates, what they believe, who's going to be the best leader, who's the most conservative, all of those things begin to actually take form. Iowa's today, New Hampshire's in 8 days, on February 9th. South Carolina Republican primary begins on, well, takes place on, I should say, February 20th. Then on to the Nevada caucus on the 23rd. Then we get to Super Tuesday. And Super Tuesday is when roughly about a quarter of the delegates are awarded that day. And you know, we have listeners, we have new listeners, and thank you for joining us. And for those that have been here from the beginning, I'm incredibly grateful for you. In fact, I got a note from someone over the weekend that's a listener from the beginning. But I'm grateful for all of you for listening to this show from the beginning. For those of you that have joined us, I hope that you jump right in. But I given where we are with the political or the presidential selection process, I thought maybe it would be appropriate to kind of go through what's going on here politically, but also mechanically, also just the process here. And this could be, watching this process unfold could be a bit of an education for many people. Now, those in this audience are very, very well educated, but you come from all different backgrounds and experiences. Some of you have been voting in primaries for, I mean, as long as you can remember. Others, this may be the very first time that you vote. You may not really, you know a lot about the candidates, but maybe you haven't seen the process unfold. And this, incidentally, to me, is one of the great lessons of what it means to have 50 individual states, a constitutional republic of 50 autonomous individual states that have formed together to create the federal government, the United States Constitution, but that this government is not—it's not a top-down approach, and this is proven, incidentally, in many ways. But illustrated in how we select our president. In fact, beginning with Iowa tonight, I mean, each state gets what's called delegates. Now, the Republican delegation and the Democrat delegation, how they elect their president, or how they nominate their president, I should say, their presidential candidate, it differs a little bit, but it's essentially the same in that each state is awarded delegates by the party. So the Republicans at tonight's Iowa caucus, the state of Iowa is worth 30 delegates. So while the popular vote determines the delegates, it's the delegates that actually cast the vote for the presidential nominee at the Republican National Convention sometime this summer. I don't have that date directly in front of me, but that's where we have the official nomination of the president. Like this, for example, this will coincide when you hear speeches. Of course, you won't hear these sorts of speeches from the Republicans, but you'll hear the speeches where Barack Obama promises to, what, to basically save the planet, to bring down the oceans, the sea levels, and all sorts of nonsense like this. But this is when the final leg of the presidential election process begins, when the Democrats nominate their candidate, the Republicans theirs, and then, of course, any independents begin to jump into the fray or finalize that process, and we get to the final ballot and vote for president in November. But to get to the nomination process, each state has its own process, its own way of assigning delegates. So Iowa has 30 delegates. 15 of those are what they call at-large. 12 are congressional delegates, and 3 are the automatic delegates. And I'll explain that really briefly. First of all, every state, now this is again according to the Republican rules, because the Democrats assign delegates based upon their own rules. Each party weights states differently, assigns delegates differently, and so forth. But I'm speaking specifically at this point about the Republicans. So the 30 delegates, half of them are at large. So every state begins with 10 at-large delegates, and they get bonus delegates that are based on how that state has done in the past regarding Republican electoral success. So Iowa starts with 10, and they get a bonus of 5. So they get 15 at-large delegates. Then every state receives three delegates per congressional district. The state of Iowa has 4 congressional districts, U.S. congressional districts. So 4 times 3 is 12, in case you are a recovering liberal. So there's 12 of those. That brings us to 27. And each state also receives 3 automatic delegates, which represent the state's national committeeman, the state's national committeewoman, and the state chair of the party, bringing us to 30 delegates. Now, these are actual, represented by actual people, and these 30 delegates will go to the national convention in, sometime this summer. And they will be casting their votes for president of the United States. Now, these delegates are bound by the process that is set forth by their state. So there are several different ways that a state can choose to assign their delegates. There's a proportional division amongst the delegates. There can be a winner-take-all divvying up of the delegates, meaning, so proportionally means, which is what Iowa is, incidentally, proportional means If a candidate who's running for the nomination gets a certain amount of votes, they get an automatic, once they reach a certain threshold, whatever that threshold is, say in the case of Iowa, it essentially is for every 3.33% that a candidate receives tonight in the total vote in the state of Iowa, that candidate will essentially, and it's a little bit more complicated than that, based upon rounding and if others had met the threshold to receive the first delegate and so forth, but Delegates will be assigned essentially for every 3.33% that someone receives in the election tonight, in the caucus. Well, and we'll talk a little bit about that, too. I guess I might as well say that. Now, so Iowans will caucus at first, so the communities get together. The folks that are actually going to caucus, which incidentally is about 20% of Iowans actually do this. So they'll go to a meeting. Each candidate has a representative there that will make the case for them to receive your support. And then, in the case of the Democrats, they actually physically move about the room in groups that support the candidate. But I don't want to talk about the Democrats. That, you know, we kind of, I think, know where this is going, unless Hillary ends up in an orange jumpsuit. But be that as it may, the Republicans then will actually cast votes. And you'll find, and if you've seen this, the latest polling, you'll see that many people are still undecided or could be convinced, which is interesting. You know what, in a primary state, you're not allowed to campaign for a person within so many feet or yards of the polling place's entrance. In fact, in my state, you can't even take literature into the polling booth with you. So if someone gave you a flyer for, you know, Rick Santorum or whoever, you can't even take that into the booth with you. Iowa's a little bit different. Now, there's nothing going on like that in the booth, but they are trying to persuade you that's the nature of the caucus, trying to persuade you in a certain direction up to the very last minute before the vote. So they walk in, they'll cast their vote, and essentially for every 3.33%, someone or a candidate will get one delegate from Iowa. And that is how the delegates must vote, however the final tally is tonight. So right now, according to the latest polls, Trump is at 28%, Cruz is at 23%, Rubio, I think Rubio was at maybe 15%. I think Carson may have been at 4th at 10%. I've got a stack of papers here with articles and information and so forth, but I believe, here we go. Trump 28, Cruz 23, Rubio 15, Carson 10, Rand Paul 5, Chris Christie 3, Jeb, Carly, Huckabee, Santorum are all at 2. Uncommitted is at 2. Not sure is at 3%. And that's where we are right now with polling. Now, that does not mean that that's how the votes are going to be cast, but, you know, polling is an estimating tool that, look, done correctly, can be pretty accurate. It has been in past elections. There's been polls that have missed it. Polls have margins of error. Polls have sampling sizes that may not be representative of those that actually come to the polls. In fact, based upon turnout, if for example, evangelicals come out in larger numbers than are expected, that appears to favor Ted Cruz, and that gap between Ted Cruz and Donald Trump shrinks from 5 points to 1 point if the turnout is amongst evangelicals is higher than folks anticipate. It's a complicated process as far as, you know, getting the polls exact, but they're an estimating tool. So it's still very close, really. I mean, the margin of error on this, I believe was 4%. But regardless, it's close enough to where really Cruz or Trump appear to be able to win this tonight. And if, who knows? I mean, Rubio looks like he's going to have a good showing as well. But that's the reason they play the game. That's the reason we actually cast the ballots. That's the reason there's representatives here trying to persuade folks at the last minute on who to vote for, who to support. So these 30 delegates are going to be what they call binding. The way that Iowans vote is how these delegates have to be cast at the national convention when we vote, when the states all get together to vote and nominate the Republican candidates, presidential candidate for the final general election in November of this year. So in order for a candidate to receive the nomination, they have to reach 1,237 delegates. So you can see proportionally, Iowa is a small part of this. But look, coming out of Iowa with some sort of some momentum is good because, first of all, it begins to go bang, bang, bang after this in the process. And when we get to March, it is, I think 60% of the states will have had their primaries or their caucuses that have already taken place by the 15th. So you can see that this is going to move quickly here over the next 6 weeks. But getting to 1,237 votes, delegates, is going to be a challenging process, especially for the early states, which until the 15th, each state has to allocate its votes, its delegates, proportionally. So it's not a winner-take-all scenario, which I'm not endorsing. I'm not suggesting one style is better than another. I'm just telling you. I'm trying to shine some light on this process. So Iowa, which is today, has 30 delegates. New Hampshire, which is next week on Tuesday, awards 23 delegates. South Carolina on the 20th will allocate 50 delegates. And then Nevada on the 23rd of this month will be assigning 30 delegates as well. Then when we get to March 1st, we have Alabama, 50 delegates. Alaska, 28. Arkansas, 58. Colorado, which has 37, but because of the changes to their rules, these delegates are not bound. So they can then, when they get to the Republican National Convention, these delegates can vote for whomever they decide. Georgia has 76. They're also March 1st. Massachusetts has 42. Minnesota, 38. North Dakota, 28. I think North Dakota's delegates are unbound too, but I could be wrong on that, like Colorado. Oklahoma, 43, Tennessee, 58, Texas, 155, Vermont, 16, Virginia, 49, and Wyoming, 29. So those are all on March the 1st. It's Super Tuesday. And these are all proportionally assigned. I believe some of these states can actually have it to where if a candidate reaches 50%, they can get all the delegates. But essentially, if there's going to remain quite a few candidates in the field, it's going to be very difficult to reach that threshold. I mean, even when Trump's been leading in these polls, I think one poll in Florida I saw him at 48%. But he's never eclipsed the 50% mark. So the point is, when you see that these delegates are going to be assigned proportionally to the state, to how the state votes, and if folks are voting for Trump, Cruz, Rubio, Carson, and in different proportions, but no one in majority fashion, it becomes obvious that getting to the 1,237 delegates at this point, the 1,237 delegates becomes a very complicated matter. And if we get to the Republican National Convention this summer, and they cast that first vote, each delegate from the state cast the first vote, and no one reaches the 1,237 threshold, the delegates are no longer bound. And we'll begin what we call a brokered convention. We've talked about that a little bit on here. I'm mentioning this because this is a fairly decent possibility at this particular point, simply because there's so many candidates, and with the proportional allocation of delegates, at least through the 15th of March, it is quite possible that no one will reach that threshold. Then we have a whole other problem to consider. And I want to stop and take a break. And when we get back after the break, we'll talk about what could be happening there. Then we'll talk specifically about Iowa with something else that had happened over the weekend. Some of the criticism Ted Cruz is taking for campaigning, even though he's just trying to win. He's trying to win the election. So anyway, going to stop and take a break. More when we get back about Iowa and the election, the nomination process anyway. So sit tight. Be back in just a minute. Make sure your booster shots are up to date by signing up for our free monthly email newsletter. It's educational, it's fun, and it's free. Sign up today by going to theantidotoliberalism.com/newsletter. That's theantidotoliberalism.com/newsletter. For you, the listeners of The Antidote to Liberalism, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I've been a member of Audible since May of 2014, and I love it. I've listened to novels, books on business, political books, you name it. In fact, one of my most recent downloads was given to me by one of our listeners, Ben Carson's America the Beautiful. What a good man and solid presidential candidate. But if you'd rather check out a great novel instead, I highly recommend The 12th Imam by Joel Rosenberg. Of course, you'll want to get the rest of his books in the series after that, too. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/antidote. Again, that's audibletrial.com/antidote for your free audiobook. There's nothing to lose with this free trial, so why not give it a try? Welcome back to The Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. It is Monday, February 1st, the day of the Iowa caucus. And, you know, I hope that this is kind of, it's going to be a confusing process, especially if you haven't followed this before, if this is, you know who your candidate is, you know where you stand politically. But to see this unfold, you know, typically it unfolds rather simply. Someone rises to the top. Someone begins to dominate in the polls. There's not so many candidates vying for our attention. We end up with the nominee relatively quickly. In fact, a lot of times in my state of Indiana, we don't vote here until May. Sometimes we don't even have a choice on the ballot. Meaning that the nominee has essentially been chosen by that point. That is not super likely to be the case this year. And a lot of that's because of the proportional allocation of delegates and the number of candidates that are running. So before we left, we talked about getting to the point of the Republican National Convention, which the point of that convention is to actually officially nominate the presidential candidate for the Republican Party. And that winner needs 1,237 delegates cast in his or her favor in order to receive the nomination. Now, if we get to that point and there's not enough, no one reaches that threshold on the first vote. We said that the states have to vote. They're bound, well, most of the states, not Colorado, and I believe North Dakota is not as well. But everyone else has to vote in accordance with the rules that their state has based upon the votes of their people during the primaries and caucuses, as is the case tonight with Iowa. Once Iowa casts its votes and those are tallied, we will know late tonight or maybe after midnight, something like that, how many delegates each of the candidates will get, because no one's going to get all 30, and that's important to note. I mean, let's just say that Donald Trump gets a third. I mean, it looks like the most delegates Trump's going to be able to get, incidentally, and I'm not going to say this often, but this is a blanket statement. This is not an endorsement. I'm telling you facts here, and right now Trump is in the lead. I picked him because he's in the lead. 28% is what he has now, but if he gets, let's say, a third, for simple math, the most delegates he's going to walk away with are 10. and he's got to get to 1,237, or Cruz has to get to 1,237, or Carson, or Rubio, or Christie, or Bush, or Kasich, or Fiorina, or Huckabee, or Santorum, or whoever. And then no one gets there, and we get to the Republican National Convention. The process of entering into a brokered convention will take place. And that's when it can get interesting. And that's when, candidly, it can get really dangerous. Because now you've got some of the Republican establishment involved in this process. And I'm not saying uniformly that all of them are not conservative, but they're not necessarily favorable to a candidate like Ted Cruz or a candidate like Donald Trump. Although some of you would tell me, and maybe you're right, that they're cozying up to Trump more so than they were 6 months ago, 3 months ago, what have you. But what happens at that point? And I think that that's one of the reasons why these candidates are sticking in, because if they have delegates and they can jockey for a position in the administration, or if they can get the party's platform changed in some way or negotiate something else in their interest, I think that's what's at stake for some of these guys. Because then it becomes a trade. And the delegates get together, and based upon their negotiations and the final jockeying for position and so forth, they'll come out and someone will get 1,237 plus delegates. And I've said on here before, what happens, let's assume that Trump is in the lead. Let's say he's got 1,000 or whatever the delegates, but not enough. What happens if he's in the lead, but doesn't have enough to meet the threshold? The party gets together at the convention, says, we don't want Trump. We don't want Cruz. We want Bush, Kasich, Christie, Rubio, what have you. They make their selection. Does Donald Trump run third party? He said from the beginning, if I'm not treated fairly, I'll run third party. Does Michael Bloomberg, who's not, of course, involved in the Republican primaries, but by seeing Trump running for president, does he jump in as third party? Do we have four people on the ballot? I don't know. All bets are off at this point. But you don't necessarily have to quote-unquote win tonight to win. Let's say Cruz doesn't win tonight. Let's say Trump gets 10 delegates, but Cruz gets 7 or 8. I mean, according to polls, it looks like Trump will perform better in New Hampshire. And he might receive a higher proportion of the delegates there. But Cruz is, I mean, these other candidates are going to be getting delegates as well. And just because you're a candidate, if you're a Rubio fan, if you're a Carson fan, just because they don't win lead tonight, have the most delegates tonight, it does not necessarily mean that this is over. What really means it's over is when the money dries up and they're not able to fundraise anymore and people begin to abandon ship and move to these other candidates. So while Iowa is important, it's not the be-all, end-all. This, to me, is fascinating. So we'll see how this plays out. It is important. It is important how Iowa goes, but it does not necessarily mean that's what happens across the board. I mean, every state is different. That's the beauty of America. That's the beauty of having 50 autonomous states that are part of a federal government that agreed to sign on to the Constitution when they ratified the Constitution. That's the beauty of it. I love this. And it's a great way, it's a great illustration for what our system looks like. It's not just the most people simple majority vote. It's each state has a voice. Each state is represented. Each state can pick a different person that they want to be the presidential candidate. And when the dust settles, we'll have one. But if no one gets to 1,237 delegates, this could be a very, very tricky situation here. So, anyway, I mentioned before the break as well that Ted Cruz has come under a little bit of fire over the weekend because of a... I'm just bringing this up because I've seen it in the news, and I just wanted to make sure that we address it. He's getting criticism for a mailer that his folks had sent out, and this has been confirmed by the Cruz campaign that they have done this. It's a letter that basically lists the names of individuals, how frequently they've participated in the... I don't know if it's just the caucuses or if it's how much of the time they actually go to the polls when they're open, not just during a caucus time, but in general. And it lists your name, and it lists a grade beside it. So it would say, you know, Todd Huff, 55% F or whatever. Get out to the polls, increase your score, something like that. Now, this has upset some people. It's been called misleading. It's been called a lot of different things. But the state government actually sells these records for political purposes. So the government's profiting. But somehow Cruz is being blamed here for the problem, even though the state government sold the information. And they're trying to drive turnout. Now, if a Democrat did this, if a liberal did this, it'd be called get out the vote. I mean, do you remember the old vote or die campaign? I mean, I'm not saying the campaign should or shouldn't do this, and I'm not saying that there isn't or won't be some sort of political fallout from this. But if a Democrat did this, it'd be called get out the vote. They're just trying to get more people to the polls. But Ted Cruz is facing criticism, and I love this, by the way. His response, he says this, that he would, quote, apologize to nobody for using every tool we can encourage, or we can, to encourage Iowa voters to come out and vote. He says, look, we're here to win this. We're here to win this. I'm not here to apologize. We've listened to Trump talk about winning and winning and winning for so long. That's what I'm here to do too. I don't apologize for this. We're using the tools at our disposal to win an election. And that's what we're doing. So anyway, you're going to, if you haven't seen this, you're probably going to, and there's going to be just outrage amongst those in the media and the left. But this had been done before, as the campaign points out. But I just wanted to point to this because a conservative does this, and it's the end of the world. A liberal does this, it's just called getting out the vote. Anyway, see if this hurts him. I mean, it could hurt him. Some people don't like seeing their name and how often they've been to the polls on a piece of paper that could be going to their neighbors. That's another issue altogether. But I love the strength and the standing firm here. You are there to win. You get one chance to do this, and apologizing, showing weakness, giving in, taking the traditional route of falling on your sword is just not what we need to see right now. So I like this. Anyway, we're going to stop and take a second break. When we get back, a couple of other quick things, so sit tight. Be back in just a minute.
Are you looking for an alternative to employer-provided health insurance? Maybe your rates have skyrocketed, or maybe your employer doesn't provide health insurance. And then you visited healthcare.gov and realized how much of a debacle Obamacare really is. Why don't you take a look at what my family and I do for our healthcare needs? We're members of Samaritan Ministries, and we absolutely love it. If you're looking for a biblical, non-insurance approach to your healthcare needs, visit theantidotetoliberalism.com/healthcare to learn more. And as an added bonus, my listeners will receive an exclusive $50 credit, but only when you complete the application on my website. Go to theantidotetoliberalism.com to apply or to get more information. My family and I love it, and we think you will too. God bless. Well, welcome back to The Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. Today is Monday. It's February 1st, the day of the Iowa caucus, a week from the Super Bowl. Good time of year. Heck, it's been mild here in my state. It's been in the 50s. Heck, it's been 60, I think. If this is the consequence of global warming, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how you can complain about this, but it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for joining us. You know, I wanted to address quickly, apparently, and this is interesting to me. I've just got a few minutes here. But it's interesting to me that, you know, I try to be objective on this show. I was accused over the weekend of clearly being behind, quote-unquote, behind Donald Trump. Look, I've never endorsed a candidate. And that's deliberate. My job, as I see it, is to talk about conservatives and conservative ideas and to stand up for any and all candidates. Look, in the sense that they're receiving meaningless, senseless attacks, if these guys are going to be attacked, it should be for genuine policy positions. It shouldn't be just because they're in the lead. And the typical, I mean, we have seen this time and time again. The left comes out, guns a-blazing. It doesn't matter who our candidate is. I mean, they have painted Ted Cruz as an unlikable guy. Now, does he go to Washington to get along? No. But is he an unlikable guy? I mean, Donald Trump calls him nasty. Is he a nasty guy? I think absolutely not. But this is what happens. So, in the course of time, apparently, some believe that I have been behind Trump. I'm not behind Trump. Trump doesn't need me behind him, in front of him, beside him, whatever. But if you're looking for criticism of Donald Trump, just across the board, if you're going to go to listen or look for a show or desire a show where I am pleading and begging with you not to support a certain candidate, this isn't the place. The comment I got was actually very professional, very sincere. But I'm not behind Trump. I mean, me being obviously behind Trump would me be saying to you, I'm supporting Donald Trump. I've not said that. I've not come close to saying that. I don't need a conservative litmus test. I think Trump has done good things for this election. And there's some things that he's brought to the forefront by sheer force of will. Immigration. I mean, some of his positions on fighting the war on terror. And I'm not even defending those. But he has redefined the way that politics take place in 2016. And I think his brash and braggadocious approach has actually given the other guys, I'm not saying that they need him, but they've seen that he's walked through the fire, and I think it's emboldened them. I do, and I'm not suggesting that they were weak before or that they were unprincipled or what have you. I think he's helped them. Now, are there legitimate concerns about Donald Trump? Absolutely. He's in the past supported single-payer health care. He came out over the weekend, incidentally, said that that's not his position. He doesn't want a single-payer system. If you want me to say that Trump's lying to you, again, you've turned into the wrong place. But if you want me to say that he's inconsistent, he is inconsistent there. Single-payer health care is not a conservative principle. Donald Trump has been pro-choice in the past. He now calls himself 100% pro-life. I'm not going to call Donald Trump a liar.
That is for you to make your own decision. But he has been inconsistent in the past. And there's other issues as well. I don't have time for based upon this segment, but I'm not behind Donald Trump. I'm not behind Ted Cruz. I'm not behind Marco Rubio. I'm not behind anyone. In fact, Friday's episode, I actually had something positive to say about each and every one of these guys. And I didn't even say anything about Trump positively because Trump wasn't at the debate I was speaking about on Thursday. But I'm not going to attack someone relentlessly, beg you not to vote for them. That's their job to get elected. That's not my job. I'm not engaging in that. So anyway, truly, truly appreciate the feedback, but I just, you know, given the sincerity and how well thought out this this comment was, I thought, you know, I'm going to say something about this because I'm not supporting Trump. But I'm also not going to bash Trump. I'm also not going to attack him. Because it's not an all-or-nothing proposition. It's not as though he's got a 0% conservative rating. The more he talks and the more that comes out, the rating may be lower than people believe or want to believe. But it's not zero. It's not Hillary Clinton. It's not Bernie Sanders. It's not sexy, sexy, sexy Martin O'Malley. I mean, these guys are socialists. Does Trump have legitimate problems with the conservative base? I say absolutely. And for those of you that love him, hear me out objectively here. I'm not attacking him. But there are issues, conservative issues, that he has problems with. It's up to you to decide if you can reconcile those, if you can support him, what have you. But I'm not endorsing him here. I'm just not going to stand by idly when I see these, what I see as senseless attacks, because it's the standard operating procedure by those that are in the media, on the left, and so forth. If our candidates go down, they should go down because we collectively think that they're not the right conservative candidate, not because the media doesn't want them to be president. So, got to stop and take a break. When we get back, we'll wrap up for the day, and then tomorrow we'll get into the results of the Iowa caucus. So sit tight, be back in just a minute. I'm not a full-time podcaster, but I play one on this show. My daytime job is running a small business called Huff Promotional Strategies. We are a graphic design and promotional products company that helps clients with a wide range of projects ranging from logos and websites to promotional products and apparel. We have experience working with well-known brands, small businesses like ours, and everything in between. So if you need help with marketing or promotional products, why not give us a try? Visit huffpromotional.com/podcast today for more information, and you'll find a 10% discount code that we will apply to your next order. We work with businesses, churches, schools, civic groups, sports leagues. You get the idea. Visit huffpromotional.com/podcast today to learn more and to get your 10% discount code. That's huffpromotional.com/podcast. Welcome back to the Antidote to Liberalism. This is the last segment of the day before we wrap up. And Iowa caucus, they begin caucusing tonight. I believe it's at 7 p.m. Central Time. Should know the results of the vote sometime late tonight, maybe 11 o'clock, depending upon how quickly things are reported and so on and so forth. But a few other things behind the scenes that I need to tell you about. Number one, I've had an issue with iTunes. I've changed my where we host the podcast, and there is still an issue with it loading to iTunes. So if you're listening or trying to listen on iTunes, there may still be some technical problems because it is not pulling from the new host yet. So I have a note into to Apple, to iTunes, to try to get this resolved. And hopefully here within the next day or so, it's going to be refreshing that feed and you'll be able to get this on iTunes again. If you can't, and if this should ever happen again, and I'm sorry that it has, the episodes are available on our website, theantidotetoliberalism.com. You can also go to Spreaker or TuneIn or, well, there's a lot of places. SoundCloud is where we host these now as well. You can sign up to receive the episodes by email. So I apologize for the inconvenience. I'm working on it. I have a ticket open with iTunes, and hopefully here within the next day or so, this will be fixed, and I again apologize for the episodes not feeding to iTunes. So anyway, guys, that's going to wrap it up for me today. As always, I appreciate each and every one of you, whether you agree with me or not, whether you agree with me in part, 5%, 100%, whatever it is, I appreciate each and every one of you. I appreciate the comments, and I welcome those. Email address is todd@theantidotetoliberalism.com. You can connect with us on Twitter @CommonSenseGear as well. So anyway, it's going to wrap it up. Tomorrow we will talk about Iowa and all of the things that are happening politically around us on the landscape as we move forward to select the Republican candidate for president of the United States. So anyway, do your part. Get out there and vote. Select the most conservative, strongest candidate you can. So you guys have a great day. See you tomorrow. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. Your inoculations are now up to date. But since the disease of liberalism is ubiquitous and highly contagious, we need to see you again tomorrow. In the meantime, to help you boost your immunity, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast.